This week, Penguin opens the vaults on one of the most tantalising of all literary legacies, Vladimir Nabokov's unfinished novel, The Original of Laura. Nabokov was determined it should be destroyed after his death, but his son and translator Dmitri was equally determined that it deserved to survive. I'm Claire Armistead, and with me to discuss whether the finished, or perhaps that should be unfinished, item was worth the trouble is Alexis Kirschbaum from Penguin and Sarah Crown, editor of The Guardian's books website. Welcome, both of you.
Hi.
Now, the book's been under lock and key until the very last moment, but Sarah, I know you've spent the last few hours reading it. Could you describe it for us?
Yes, it's an absolutely beautiful volume. It's got a deep black cover. And inside, the way in which it's laid out is really interesting and striking. You have Nabokov always wrote on index cards before he transferred the book, his books into manuscript. And this book has been set out with the index cards at the top of the page, and then underneath them, the words on the index cards transcribed so that you can read it.
Alexis, you've kept all the spelling mistakes in. This is very much a scholar's edition, isn't it?
Well, we thought if we were going to reproduce the cards as they were, and there's so few words, it was really important to keep in everything to make it as accurate as possible. So,
you put a huge amount of welly into it, high production values.
Yes, yes.
Why did you decide to do that?
I think that's a really important question because I think it dignifies the book, and we wanted it to sort of be a celebration of Nabokov, as and to show it a lot of attention and care. And I think by doing that, you're showing respect for what it is, and you're allowing it to be read in a way that it was written.
Now, Sarah, can you tell us what the story is, insofar as there is a story?
Yes, there are two strands to the story, two main strands. The first is the story of a husband and wife, a much older husband, a young and beautiful wife, Flora, whom the husband dotes upon, but who has many affairs and lots of sex with lots of different people. And then there's the story inside the story, which is that one of Flora's lovers writes a book about her, which he calls My Laura, and then gives to Flora's husband, this doctor, Philip Wilde, to read. And Wilde is sort of devastated, but, you know, it internalizes it all and begins this process of imagining himself dead from the toes up. To be fair, I think that makes it sound a lot more complete than it actually is, because that summary gives it a sense of completeness, which actually isn't there when you read it.
Is there a lot of sex in it? We think of Nabokov as sex, don't we?
We do. No, I don't think. Not really. Nothing very explicit, anyway. There's some sort of speculation, imaginings, but nothing.
It's very
raunchy.
It's very physical, though.
It is very. It's extremely physical. But I thought the physicality actually played out in his description, Wilde's description, the doctor's description of his own aging body.
Yes, exactly.
And that's where the gaze is going. Not so much onto the
and
sex.
Disgust with his own body.
Yeah.
It's sort of like
revulsion.
Swiftian revulsion of
yeah.
your own
yeah.
physical mortality.
The big question: does it justify the effort?
From a production sense, absolutely. It's a gorgeous object. Would take pride of place on any shelf. As a way of venerating Nabokov, you could say there's certainly an argument for that. I think in terms of the text, in terms of the idea of it as a novel, it's on the front it's called a novel in fragments. I think really I've got to say no. It's not a novel. It's not even a novel in fragments. I'd say it's possibly a short story in fragments or a novella. But I found it quite an upsetting experience reading it, actually. To me, it didn't feel that there was even the reaching, the striving for brilliance. It felt like notes and a death rattle. I really found it quite upsetting. And I'm a huge fan of Nabokov. I love his work. And this, I don't think, does him justice at all.
Alexis, justify yourself.
Justify myself. Well, I think I obviously disagree. but I find reading it, I think there are certain phrases and sentences that are breathtaking. And definitely Nabokov's voice is still there, and his playfulness and his sense of a character is there, I think. I also enjoy reading it in the fragmentary form because it's almost like you're close reading a poem. And I think it's quite rare to be able to read a novel so closely and to have so much focus on the style, which you have to do because the plot isn't there. And I just find it a very interesting way of reading, actually. And because style is so fundamental to Nabokov, I think I think it's wonderful to read.
You see, there, I think that was something, again, I'm going to be disagreeing with you, but that was something that I felt quite strongly wasn't there. Because although I agree that there were some lovely moments, one of my favourites was there's a section about halfway through when Nabokov is talking about the publication of the book within the book, My Laura, and he talks about its emergence into the world and its sort of climbing and descending up the ladder of the bestseller list. And that, I thought, was lovely and pure Nabokov, playful and funny, and making of something small and sort of silly something kind of great but also silly. And that was absolutely wonderful. But in terms of the style, I can see what you mean about it being an interesting reading experience to sit down with these index cards and to go through them. But I wouldn't like to compare it to close reading a poem, because, again, you're talking about the difference between completeness and incompleteness. And in the same way that you wouldn't read the fragments of a poem and expect to be able to respond to them in the way that you would a complete poem, I feel very strongly that you can't do that in this case either. And stylistically, I mean, even when you get down to things like sort of odd spellings and words missed out and things like that, it's so clearly not a finished version that it feels to me unjust to respond to it stylistically.
Would Alexis, he's very much a writer's writer, isn't he? Would you expect people to go through and punch out the index cards? Do you think people are going to be subjecting it to that sort of forensic examination?
I think it depends on how much you love Nabokov and whether you want to buy two copies of it. I will, and I think it's an... Yeah, I will do that, yes. But I want to take up the point on style, because I didn't mean that it was like a poem. I just mean that it's very rare to read a novel that closely and to focus sentence by sentence, because that's how it's written.
Yeah.
And I also think it's very... You feel very close to Nabokov. I felt very close to Nabokov when I was reading it, because it's his handwriting. I mean, and
yeah,
we've reproduced the cards so to such a high standard that you can even see his thumbprints on the cards. And I mean, he is my favorite writer, and to think of him sort of in his deathbed writing this book, and thinking of it as a completion. He's definitely sort of referring back to his first novel, and he's also referring back to Lolita.
Mm. And he has a character called Hubert H. Hubert in it, doesn't he?
Yes, and it's very melancholic, and it makes me quite sad to think of it, and sad that he couldn't complete it.
But doesn't that make it an object rather than a novel?
I don't know how you would define the difference.
Well, I suppose what I'm suggesting is that, I guess you call it a novel in fragments, so then perhaps that answers my question. But your response is to the idea of Nabokov writing the book rather than perhaps to the book itself, and to the cards, as you know, with his thumbprint, and rather than to the writing, maybe.
Well, I think we've been very honest about that. I don't think we've ever tried to make this a novel. We've been very honest in our production of it by reproducing the cards and showing exactly what it is. And so I don't think... I think we have objectified it. And it isn't your average novel, but that's the whole point. It's not supposed to be an average novel. It's something different.
Yeah, I was very interested in his use of words. Very
exactly.
Odd words. How in control of his words do you think he was by this stage?
Well,
there are obviously misspellings, but then there's obviously there's also a vocabulary that's completely unfamiliar.
Well, he always liked to use unfamiliar vocabulary, and that was one thing he did, and I don't know if it was because English was his second language. I don't think that was why, actually. He wrote English better than anyone could. Mm. No one can say how heavily medicated he was at this point or how ill he was.
Mm. Now, we actually, on Saturday, are carrying a fantastically perceptive piece by Martin Amis about Nabokov in more generally, but also about this. And he says, when a writer starts to come off the rails, you expect skid marks and broken glass. With Nabokov, naturally, the eruption is on the scale of a nuclear accident. Sarah, do you think this is a nuclear accident?
In Amis's piece, he's actually talking about Ada, a late-ish novel of Nabokov's, but I feel like I don't have enough to judge. I think in Dmitri's introduction, he talks about this being the makings of a masterpiece. And my feeling about that is that you can't have the makings of a masterpiece. You either have a masterpiece or not. So you couldn't give somebody the plot details of King Lear and say, this is the makings of a masterpiece. Mm. It's not. It's the complete object that is the masterpiece. And so I feel that it's unjust to try and judge Nabokov on the basis of this book.
I feel one thing that I hope people don't do, which I think is what you've done a bit, is to try and judge it as a novel. Okay. Yeah. It's not a novel, and we really have been very straightforward. I mean, we couldn't have been more honest about the fact that it's not a novel in the way that we produced it. Mm. And I hope that people won't read it and expect a novel, because that's not what it is.
Sarah, can you just tell us about some of the good bits? Because you and I were talking earlier, and there is some really lovely writing in it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Read me, for example, as you said, largely concerned with the disintegration of the body. Read us a little bit of that.
Yes, there's the quote that both you and I, Claire, really loved was this bit when the doctor, Philip Wilde, is talking about his sort of disintegrating body, and he describes it. He describes it in this paragraph: "I loathe my body, that trunk full of bowels, which I have to carry around, and everything connected with it. The wrong food, heartburn, constipation's leaden load, or else indigestion with a first instalment of hot filth pouring out of me in a public toilet."
It's like Ulysses, isn't it? Like, it's like James Joyce.
Yeah,
it's
very Ulysses. It really James is Joyce. Very Joycean.
And there's another bit that I really liked was anyone who's a fan of Nabokov will know that chess games often crop up in his work, and it crops up again here when Flora is a little girl and a lover of her mother, who was also, in, as you might expect, in a book by Nabokov, fairly interested in her, has brought round a chess set, a red and white chess set for her when she's sick. And it says, "Mr. Hubert had brought his pet a thoughtful present, a miniature chess set, in brackets, she knew the moves, with tickly-looking little holes bored in the squares to admit and grip the red and white pieces. The pin-sized pawns penetrated easily, but the slightly larger nobleman had to be forced in with an enervating joggle." And it goes on for a little bit further, but, you know, it's not about sex, but it's pretty explicitly about sex.
There's quite a lot of description of nubile young bodies, isn't there? Which is, again, very, very...
And I think that must have occurred to him more than it usually did, because his was disintegrating and his was failing him. So the interest, he always had sort of an aesthetic or artistic interest in beauty, obviously, and in the beauty of young girls. But it must have occurred to him even more forcefully, it's as his was giving true, out.
Now, again, in this rather wonderful piece that Martin Amis has written, he talks about Nabokov's obsession with young girls being redeemed in his great novels by his style, and the fact that as his style disintegrated, the morality became more queasy. Mm. Sarah, do you feel that here the morality is queasy because he is let down? You see a lecherous old male imagination.
It didn't strike me as much as it might have done, because actually I think sex is quite downplayed here. Although there are these descriptions of beautiful young women, it didn't feel awful. Whereas, you know, perhaps it has done elsewhere. It's a very difficult one to navigate, I think, with Nabokov. But we were talking about this around the desk quite recently in relation to Philip Roth and his new book, The Humbling, which is, again, you know, as with a lot of Philip Roth, it's about an old man's obsession with a much younger woman, and that's much more explicitly sexual. He goes into the sex quite a lot. And the sort of consensus semi-consensus that we came to was that these are subjects that absolutely should be dealt with. But yes, they have to be dealt with brilliantly, and probably in Roth's latest novel, The Humbling, he really falls short, and so then the queasiness of the subject comes to the surface. But I didn't feel that this felt perhaps as short. I just felt it was absent, actually. A lot. It wasn't as explicit as I expected it to be at all.
Mm. It's interesting that you mentioned Philip Roth, because one thing that occurred to me when I was reading this was that, in a way, he's ahead of his time, isn't he? It's a literature of the Third Age he's moving towards, and that's where we are now. This was written 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that, Sarah?
Yes, it really. It's certainly that's the major preoccupation. The most interesting thing for me about the book was an old man's preoccupation with the death of his body. as divorced from the death of his mind. And actually, in this case, that divorce is made explicit because his mind is controlling the death of his body, which is an interesting idea. He's in charge of it.
Yeah, exactly. He tries to take control of his own death by making it happen.
Dmitri writes in his introduction about how Nabokov was worried by his toes and his fingers in his last weeks. And you've got this character in this book tries to destroy his his toes, doesn't he? It's very graphic attempt. Yeah. How much is this fiction and how much is this a sort of diary?
I really hope it's not a diary. But I think it's hard to say. But I'm certain he didn't clip his toes off. But I'm sure his life was so limited at that moment. I'm sure that he found inspiration in what was happening to him.
So the last and the biggest question, perhaps, is do you think, Sarah, that Dmitri had the right to countermand his father's wishes? His father wanted this to be burned.
It's an interesting question, and actually I'm not completely sure of my answer, because I think when you boil it down to morals, well, then, yeah, I think he did, probably. We wouldn't have had the Aeneid if Virgil's wishes to have it burnt hadn't been countermanded. We wouldn't have had much of Kafka. Mark Twain wanted all of his literary effects to be burnt after his death. However, I think that there is a separate question, which is an aesthetic question, which is one which he should judge it on quality. And on those grounds, I think he didn't have the right to publish because, God, who am I to say what Nabokov would have wanted had he been alive? But it seems to me that this... I know you said that we can't judge it as a novel. We oughtn't to judge it as a novel. But I feel let down by it, I think. And I think that's not the feeling that you should come away from it with. And perhaps that's because my expectations of it have been sort of heated up in a different way. But yeah, I'd say on those grounds, no.
Alexis, of course you'll say yes.
Well, I think it's tricky. I mean, I think it must have been incredibly difficult for Dmitri to make this decision. And I don't think people say he did it for money. I think that's ridiculous. I mean, he's extremely unwell. He doesn't have long. He's not going to spend it. And he had to make a choice between his father, the father, and his father, the artist. And I think if he made the choice for his father, the artist, part of him made it for the public because he saw that his father belongs to the public as much as he belongs to Dmitri. And I think in many ways that's quite noble.
There is some reordering, isn't there? I mean, there's some arbitrariness in the ordering. He said this index card may have been chapter 7 originally.
Yes, it's difficult to tell what order they should be in sometimes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to cite Martin Amis for the very, very last time, he says, "This is modern literature's dirty little secrets. Writers die twice. Once when the body dies and once when the talent dies," to which I would almost add there's a third death when the reputation dies. I think it's a really interesting question that you've thrown open, and only the readers of this book, and it is a very beautiful book, will be able to decide this.
Yes. No one would ever have been able to look at Nabokov's drafts. So who's to say that Lolita didn't begin like this?
Well, that's it for today's podcast. We'll be looking at reactions to the publication in Friday's books podcast, so please leave your comments on the website. That's on www.guardian.co.uk/books. My name's Claire Armistead, and the producer is Scott Corley. Goodbye.